8:35 at your hometown station, KOHO 101. Nice to have you with us. It's the KOHO Morning Show, finishing out a busy week of programs on this Friday. It's the 5th of June, 2020. I'm Chris Hansen. As always, pleased to have 8th District U.S. Congresswoman Kim Schreier joining us on the program today, as promised. Congresswoman Schreier going to talk to us about a number of things happening in the halls of Congress right now as it pertains to the COVID-19 situation, as well as to the massive protests that are going on in the wake of the police incident that occurred involving George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We'll also be talking with Congresswoman Schreier about our situation here on the home front as it relates to that lawsuit in Chelan County and efforts to try to get the economy reopened more expeditiously in front of Governor Inslee's phase-in orders. And Kim, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Thank you, Chris. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. Thanks for asking. I imagine we're talking to you again from your home in Sammamish.
You are. You are talking with me from Sammamish. It is very likely that I will be back in D.C. About a week from now, and I will keep you posted and maybe even talk with you from Washington, D.C.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to that and always do anytime we get a chance to chat. Kim, let's talk about first, before we get into all the COVID-related issues, because that's really all we've been talking about for months now, the issue of protesting that's happening in particular, of course, here in our backyard, not a lot in north central Washington, but in the metro areas like the Sound around Seattle, et cetera, quite a bit of protesting. Some of it's turning somewhat ugly and engaging with law enforcement over the issues related to the incident of police brutality in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So, you know, at a federal level, when this happens, and it seems to me like obviously things of this nature do happen occasionally. You go back to the Ferguson, Missouri incident from some years ago. These sorts of things pop up on our social radar more and more. And I am personally of the belief that as we get more and more used to being, forgive the term, but more voyeuristic, you know, with cameras, I mean, you essentially can watch this man die when you look at the video. And those types of things tend to obviously rile up a human reaction more than when word just spreads around or rumors spread around or it's just printed matter. And when everybody can see it, I think it causes a greater uproar. There's a lot of reasons why it should. But it seems like these incidents get larger and larger every time we do see them, unfortunately, unfold. So from a federal level, with all of that in mind, I guess that's a lot to start off with for you. But, you know, what is your perspective on what can be done and should be done in the halls of Congress related to incidents like this?
Well, of course, first, before I even get to Congress's role in this, I feel like it's really important to set the stage. And I think you did a really good job there of saying, now that we have camera phones and all of this is laid bare with such public display, I think finally the message is trickling down to everybody that this is undeniable. And I just would remind everyone, you know, I was in Selma, Alabama, in Montgomery, Alabama, just a few months ago. And, you know, there is a continuum between slavery, you know, 400 years ago, all the way to now. And it that may sound strange to people who haven't really examined this, but there has been a role of really suppressing and keeping the Black community down that continued long past slavery in different forms. And, you know, even until today, there is still racism rampant in our society that some people recognize and some people don't. And I think it's really incumbent on all of us, white Americans, Black Americans, everybody, to unite around this notion that our country was founded on justice for all. And that for years, I mean, for generations, there has been this history of violence and disproportionate reactions, unwarranted reactions, that what we've had in the past has been the word of law enforcement against the word of a Black person, and that has always worked to the disadvantage of the Black victim. And now what we're seeing is a real eye-opening around the country about something that is, you know, sadly pervasive, not common, certainly not casting law enforcement all in one swath, but it is something that here in Washington, we've looked at de-escalation policies, and I think that's a really important place to go. We also know that if you look closer in Washington state, you see that some police departments are getting that de-escalation training, but that state police are not necessarily getting that because of lack of funding. And so there are things that we can do locally, starting in our police departments with our chiefs. And, you know, we had a great comment from the Kittitas County Sheriff, Clay Myers, who said, "This is deeply concerning, and it goes against all of the values of our department and what we train and what our culture is, and that, you know, we do need to take this head on and address it at every level." I hope that helps. In Congress, we will be passing legislation in the upcoming weeks to shed a light on this, to have studies. I don't know what will be in the ultimate bill, but I suspect that it will have things to do with these de-escalation policies, with having independent oversight, because I believe that having police have their own oversight does not serve the police well nor the community well, and transparency and training that happen at the local level.
Congresswoman Kim Schreiber with us today here from the 8th Congressional District here in Washington State, joining us on the Coho Morning Show. Kim, we've got other things to talk about, but you know, this is a subject that I think I'd like to stay on, because anytime that I get an opportunity, just as a host, me personally, to shed some light on some things that I feel like are universal elephants in the room, if you will, and we're on one right now, I'd like to give the opportunity to do that. So my question for you then would be, how do you mitigate the ideas behind equality? I mean, I guess I think that's always been the challenge. We've come so far, and yet I can tell you that as a straight, middle-aged white man, I have definitely been on the other end of reverse racism, and I don't have a racist bone in my body. I am not anti-Semitic. I have no issues with people's sexuality, really their choices at all. I'm quite a free thinker. And yet it's a reality for all of us, therefore. And I think that's the real tragedy, is that one group of people, one particular, in a sweeping sense, ethnicity, one gender, has put another under that oppression for hundreds and hundreds of years. And now we've started taking steps over the course of the last several decades, in particular going back to the 60s with the movement there, to really stretch out of that. And yet the danger on the other end seems to be to make sure this doesn't loop back to those that we're trying to help, I guess, in this capacity, if that makes sense. So that's always been the critical question for me. It's a huge ideological question for you, but do you have any thoughts on that at all? I'm really curious.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that we should think about is that there's a difference between equality and equity. And equality is everybody has the same opportunities in America. Everybody can do well in school. Everybody can go to college. Everybody can get a great job. Equity is different because it recognizes that not everybody has the same starting place. And so if you are coming from a history of, gosh, your family could not, because of redlining, could not buy a home in a certain area, and because of that never managed to amass wealth over time, and because of that has struggled economically, and because of that maybe hasn't had the early childhood education and preschool experience that some kids have had, that if a child is starting kindergarten 2 years behind, they never catch up. And if behavior hasn't been kind of standardized through preschool, then acting out in kindergarten already put some kids on a tougher path. And so it's kind of like saying, you know, well, an apple is hanging from that tree on a branch that's 6 feet up. It's there for anybody to take, but if you're a short person, you don't stand a chance. And as I think that moving our discussion from equality to equity may change the way that you look at what you're looking at, and giving kids a heads up. And frankly, I think that needs to start way back, you know, with pregnancies and with home visits and with early childhood education. I think that's where you really address some of these early inequities. So that would be the first thing I would say. And you can look for evidence all along the lines. You can look at the difference for the same behavior, the difference between how a black boy and a white boy are treated in kindergarten. You can look at the how that persists throughout education. You can look at, you know, the school to prison pipeline and look where that starts. It starts in kindergarten. You can look at people with equal resumes, but when one has a black sounding name and one has a white sounding name, virtually 100% of the time, the one with the white sounding name will get that job. And those are the kinds of things that continue to oppress a community. And I think until we are all able to recognize that, we may not take the steps necessary to really address those things. And frankly, if I could have everybody go and spend a weekend in Selma, Alabama with John Lewis, boy, I think that would help our country.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Kim. Again, I think that's the elephant in the room right there. It's really been over the centuries less about the color of someone's skin or the God that they prayed to, and more about the continuation of a caste structure, of a system of those who have and those who have not, that really creates that divide. And it's really difficult to watch unfold in a world, I think, where there's so much for everybody. Again, we live in such a plentiful world. There's enough food for everybody. There's enough water for everybody. There's enough resources for everybody and opportunity for everybody. And yet only few are getting the opportunity to seize that, and others by a large stretch are not able to enjoy that, unfortunately. I appreciate your remarks on that front.
Can I tell you a story?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would love
go ahead.
To tell you just a story that this is just in my own neighborhood. The parents of a black teenager were teaching their child how to drive. And together with teaching their son how to drive was, look, if you get pulled over, here's what you need to do. You need to call me and put that phone on speakerphone and put it on your dashboard. You need to roll down the window, put your hands on the steering wheel, and do not move. You need to be as respectful as you can possibly be, but make sure you have me on speakerphone, because this could be incredibly dangerous for you. You should never run. You should never put your hands in your pocket. You should not reach into your glove box. And I have to tell you that when I learned to drive, that conversation, nothing like that conversation. I mean, even the notion that I would get pulled over never even happened. And I think that's very telling.
Yeah, for
Maybe
sure.
Maybe I'll ask you, what was it like when you learned to drive? Well, do you ever have a conversation like that with your parents?
I concur, Kim. Of course, never had a conversation about being pulled over by an officer at all, and I think it was just left up to me the first time it did happen to do what anybody would do, which is not think that much of it. Of course, you feel like you've done something wrong. Maybe you know you've done something wrong, but the thought that there would be any kind of excessive force, or that I would be under some form of oppression as a result of that traffic stop, never crossed my mind. So there's a large percentage of the population, not only in our nation, but around the world, that undoubtedly live with those shadows every single day. And again, creating empathy, I suppose, and I the word racial is so tough for me, because again, I think it skims the surface on how much is going on there. But to create any kind of empathy at all, I think, is the first step in creating a greater understanding so that we can mitigate this appropriately. And just going back to what I had mentioned about, the target of reverse racism. Look, I'm not really concerned about being the target. I didn't feel especially oppressed. Anytime that someone's rude to you or they feel a certain way about you without knowing you, it's unfortunate. I look at this as a larger sociological problem, and I just think, what a tragedy, because so many of us have tried so hard our whole lives to make some strides in all of this. People have died for it, quite literally, talking about Dr. King and et cetera. And that's counterintuitive. It means we're really getting nowhere when all we're doing is teaching the other side of this spectrum to behave the same way in some instance. So that's where I was going with those remarks.
I hear you. And, I think we just all need to think about the privilege that we have that we don't even realize as, for me, a white American. That if I didn't get a spot in college because that spot was offered to somebody who is underrepresented, for example, in the physician community, well, there's 100 other schools that I can apply to and get into. And I just think it's we should all just step back and put ourselves in somebody else's shoes every now and then.
For sure. It's very difficult to do, of course, though, but that's, I think, as I mentioned, part of how this effort could really get going in the right direction. Kim, we've spent a good chunk of time already talking about the issues related to the protests going on nationwide, issues of racism and other things of that nature. On the front of the COVID crisis, real quickly, is there anything that you wanted to speak to from either the state or federal level related to that this morning that you feel like is important for folks to know right now?
Of course. From the federal level, just know that we passed the HEROES Act about 2 weeks ago. I think the part that probably matters most in your area is that there is robust funding for state and local governments. That's the funding that supports your police departments, your fire departments to fight wildfires, your EMS services, public health. And so because of a lack of economic activity and a lack of sales tax, our state and local governments are really suffering. I'm on the phone with Mayor Kunz, Mayor Flory, just a couple days ago, frequently, and I hear more than anything that they're just really struggling. So please know that is a big part of that bill, and we are hoping that gets through in some form through the Senate. The other thing I'd love to speak to is just that I hear and I feel the frustration that is bubbling through the whole state. It is bubbling through parts of King County that feel like, hey, we're not Seattle. Why can't we open? Why is this done county by county? I hear it from Chelan County feeling like, well, hold on a second. We're rural. Kittitas got approved. What's going on here? We want to move to phase two. Our small businesses are failing. And they may not come back. And I just want people to know, like, I hear that. I know that our governor hears that. I can't really speak for him, but I empathize that, you know, if things go well, nothing will happen and there's no big parade. If things go poorly and we have outbreaks across the state, the blame, I'm sure he feels, will land with him. And we're just going to need to find a balance. And I think that balance, you know, the effort toward reopening, I think we looked at Kittitas County, for example, they applied for the variants. The very next day, there was an outbreak of, I believe, 35 cases. But they demonstrated that with their public health interventions, that they were able to test and trace and respond to that blip and not let it become an outbreak. And the next week they got their variants. And so I would just, I would maybe focus on what it will take to get to phase two. And I believe that hinges on show that the local public health department has the tools, that you have the testing, you have the tracing, you have the ability to have people speak with the community in their own language, that everybody's wearing a mask to prevent spread, that those are the kinds of things that will keep the community safe and get us to phase two as quickly and safely as possible.
Well, Kim, you know yourself as a politician that very often in people's minds, the blame is going to land on you regardless of your efforts and regardless of how strong and spirited you think they've been or how successful they've been. It's just part of the territory. And I think we're also learning some valuable lessons around the nation from watching what southern states like Texas and Florida have done in trying to expedite their reopening processes and seeing some pretty large outbreaks in places, too. I mean, this is something that isn't going to just go away because we want it to, obviously. And it's also something that we're not going to be able to properly mitigate until we have a vaccine somewhere down the road. So hopefully we're getting closer to that. 8th District U.S. Congresswoman Kim Schreier with us today here on the Coho Morning Show. Kim, I've spent 20 minutes with you. Your time is very valuable. I always appreciate it. Anything else before we wrap up and I say thanks?
Oh, just it's always a delight to talk with you. And it's a great way for me to reach my constituents who aren't always on my telephone town halls. I look forward to being back physically in Wenatchee soon.
Well, when you are, we'll look forward to maybe hosting you on the program, and I'll look forward to the next time we chat in either capacity for certain. Probably won't be too long.
That sounds great. Thanks so much, Chris. Stay healthy.
Thanks again, Kim. Sure. Same to you and all your family and everybody over there in Washington, D.C. as well. 855 at your hometown station, Coho 101. Let's check Tim Creek's forecast for the weekend ahead real quickly before we head into hour four of the program today.
Mm-hmm. I'm meteorologist Tim